everyone, and welcome to the Basement Gallery's Making Changes podcast. Before we get started, I would like to preface everything and state that the views, opinions, and ideas presented in this podcast are those of the individuals in the Basement Gallery and our guests, and do not necessarily represent the views of the University of California, Davis, and its affiliates. I'm Jada or Jay. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm a fourth year art studio and design double major here at UC Davis, as well as the lead director of the Basement Gallery. I'm here with three of our BG members and Lane, but I'll have everyone else introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Justin Moore. I'm a fourth year art studio major, art history minor. Pronouns are he, him.
Hi guys, my name is Trinity. I'm a second year international relations major and a minor in art history. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and I am the volunteer coordinator.
Hello everyone, I'm Crystal Liu. I am a second year in art studio and design. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and for the Basement Gallery, I am the director of design.
I'm Lane Takahashi. My pronouns are she, her, hers as well. I'm also a double major with art studio and design, and I am a third year.
All right, so other than the questions we've borrowed from Paul Feck, today we'll be talking about peer advising, navigating UC Davis and studios at home, and then also some of the work that Lane had submitted. I'm going to start with asking you about your process and these paintings. I really like them. I feel like they're kind of surrealist in a way, especially the one with like the boxing ring and the two panel piece. Can you tell me a little bit more about that one?
Definitely. So kind of the idea behind that painting was kind of to discuss the male gaze. And so whenever I like start a project, I usually start with a basic, very basic idea. And then I start to look for references because like you said, my work is sort of surrealist. So I do like to use photo references, and I'll specifically choose photos by photographers that I know, or like if I took a picture. So I'll usually go through those sorts of things and figure out what I want to do with those. And so for the boxing ring piece, a lot of things are kind of symbolic, like the background in general. Like there's kind of a separation between the blue background and the main background. So what I was trying to do is talk about like the conflict that happens between like men and women with the male gaze, and even with women internalizing the male gaze. So with the figure on the left, the guy spray painting, the idea is that he is defining what the background is or what the subject is, being the women. And then the other figure on the right side is obviously the woman in this situation, and her gaze is not fixed on him at all. She doesn't know that he's even there creating this sort of constraint for her life. And that's where the boxing ring comes in, because it is such like a back and forth thing, but whether it's between men and women, men and themselves, or women and themselves.
Wow, that was really powerful. Is that one of the major themes you would say is in most of your work?
Yeah, I definitely feel like I treat a lot of my works coming from a feminist standpoint. I feel like that's not necessarily something that I intentionally do every time, but in the end, often that's what happened.
Nice. Okay, good to hear. What got you into peer advising in particular?
I really just saw the ad for the position, and I was really trying to work in the art studio department before. Like there was this other job that's kind of like a studio assistant. So if you guys are familiar with Dan, who works on the third floor, that position is like helping him out with maintaining the studio and all that sort of thing. And I was really interested in doing that, but I wasn't able to do it because of like a work study thing. But then I saw that the peer advising position was open, and Pam Pratell is a great lady and an excellent boss, so I was really excited to get to do that. And then on top of that, it's like you get to learn as you're helping other people, so it's like definitely beneficial for me when I'm trying to do things like build my schedule and think about classes.
Did you come into Davis as art studio or design? Which one was first, would you say, or did you come in for thinking of doing both immediately?
I came in strictly thinking art. I just wanted to be a painter, and that's really like where my true passion lies still, I believe. But talking to Pam, she was like, we were talking about things that I wanted to do with my career. And some of those things included some freelance work. And then she's like, some of the things you're talking about are actually design. So would you consider doubling with design? And I'm very glad that I did, because I feel like the two majors definitely feed off of each other.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I feel like there's a group of artists that usually go art history, double major with it. And then I really like design. So I think the two really work well together. So the Davis undergraduate, and I guess the master's program, is pretty like interdisciplinary. We were just talking about with design and art, where you don't necessarily have to stick to a concentration or anything like that. Would you say that's a benefit, or do you think that it makes it hard for a student artist to kind of figure out what they want to do in the future?
I think that it depends on what kind of artist you are. Like someone like me, I'm very open to experimenting with other fields. And like having gone into college, I had never even tried printmaking or sculpture before because it just wasn't available in my high school. So I think that for those purposes, it actually is really nice. And then you also don't have to choose like, okay, I'm going to stick with this one thing and I'm labeled as this one thing. But then like one of my old coworker peer advisors, she has kind of a self-proclaimed concentration within sculpture. So she has like sculpture and then something more specific within that. And I think that that's kind of useful because you can set those standards for yourself. But personally, I'm happy that it's this way because it doesn't limit you in terms of the things you can try.
Yeah, I guess that goes for classes outside of art studio or design. Taking GEs that you're interested in that don't necessarily intertwine with the work that you're doing artistically.
Yeah, and then that's where like talking to the staff really becomes important as you get further along in the major, because you can kind of be experimenting with multiple media, but you'll probably want to talk to some of the professors in the fields that you like, and they can probably help you figure out like, should I continue on this course or should I try this and go back to it? They're always going to like be able to tell you what's going to be the best path for you.
Yeah, especially for like design, they started opening up a lot of UX UI classes. And I was like, that's something that I really want to do. But I already like had taken, you know, things that were more geared toward like graphics and things, but I have the opportunity to go and do what I want with that.
Yeah, definitely. The design course list, like compared to art studio, was so intimidating. I'm like, I don't even know what half of these things are, but it totally opens your horizons up.
Yeah.
I just wanted to thank you for agreeing to come on. I reached out to Lane in the early days of opening the art call up because, you know, as usually happens, it's like nothing until the night before. But, you know, I think we had a class together last quarter, but I didn't know much about like your actual studio practice. And, you know, I knew you were a peer advisor just from seeing the flyers plastered around the building last year. You've already kind of answered some of the questions I had about the peer advising, but given that you kind of, I'll say, fell into that position after like trying to find something else, like what are some of the biggest takeaways? Is there any, I mean, do you see your experience as a peer advisor like factoring into your sort of long-term goals post-graduation?
Honestly, probably not, unless I were to somehow find myself like wanting to teach at some point. Like I feel like the knowledge that I've gained from peer advising would definitely give me some context as to how I might want to structure a program, like a major program at all. But I don't really see myself going into advising positions in the future. But it is like beneficial to hear the questions that people have, because everybody pretty much has the same questions. And it's the same question that you thought you were not going to be able to find the answer to like last year.
Yeah.
Would you say you're more confident now to talk to other people because now you're in a position of leadership? I know I feel like intimidated to talk to like people who know what's going on personally, because I'm a sophomore. Do you feel like having this position and being close to people who know what they're doing has helped you a lot in your art or just learning in general?
Yeah, I'd say definitely. My coworker that I mentioned before, Maxine, she actually, I felt like was a huge mentor for me because she was a senior and I was a sophomore at the time when I joined the position. So I was able to learn a lot from her, and both of us had just started the job that year. So I was going into it like very scared, because I'm like, I still kind of come to the advisors every quarter when I need to make my classes. But the thing is, like, Maxine has learned so much just from being in the major for so long that it's like, those are kind of the things that you end up talking to students about. And it's like, once you get to like where I'm at right now with like wrapping your head around the major, I really don't have it like that much more figured out than you probably do.
I was just wondering, Lane, so do you basically draw inspiration ever from the conversations you've had with students during pre-advising?
I feel like artistically, not really, because everything that we talk about is so like logistics within scheduling and stuff, but like a couple cool experiences that I had were from students that are coming to the peer advisors to say like, hey, I have an idea for this program. Like, I want to start something that involves like all the students coming together. And I feel like there's always like groups that are trying to do that, like this group that I'm talking to right now, and there were like flyers and things for stuff my first year, and some things just don't really follow through all the way and some do. But it, like, talking to people like that definitely gave me the courage to try to like create your own path. Like, if you feel like the department is not offering you something, then you should definitely like take the reins and make that an option for yourself and your fellow peers.
Yeah, I've known like triple majors, like theater and dance, art studio, art history. Like, I feel like you're able to kind of figure out how to get those to meld together some way. Like, you could go and figure out how to make sure that you can get what you want out of it.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like, I feel like one of the biggest things that comes out of peer advising or joining any sort of programs like this is just community, and things will overlap into other majors. Like, if you're in a design setting and they're like, okay, we're talking about something art, you're gonna know like five people that you could offer up for a certain project or collaboration.
All right, okay. So I think we're gonna move on to some of the Paul Thet questions. Lane, do you wanna tell me about someone who inspires you?
Yeah, so I chose to talk about Shepard Fairey for this one, just because of his path as an artist. I really appreciate the fact that he came from just being a part of skate culture, just street culture, just going out and creating things just to have fun, right? It doesn't have to like be anything super prestigious. But then later on, he sort of starts to break these boundaries where he's pulling politics into art, and he's pulling fine art into street art, and graffiti into fine art. And I think that those things are really cool. And like, one of my favorite quotes from him, this is definitely paraphrased, but he says, as an activist, you'll never do enough, but as an artist, I'm doing quite a lot. Yeah. I also want to commend Robert Beatty for his art. I think just because, like, I really appreciate how innovative his style is. And he, similarly to Shepard, doesn't really stick just to like the very high-end, prestigious fine arts sort of thing. Like, he's an illustrator for the New York Times, and then he also designed album art for like Tame Impala, and then he's also exhibiting at the same time. So I'm definitely inspired by people that really like dip their toes into multiple different areas within art.
It's cool how the whole, exposure to art or artists works. And, you know, I was just thinking, like, I occasionally do this, but it's like, how many artists or, you know, bodies of work I've been exposed to because like album artwork and just all these gateways, and just kind of shows the overlap that you were kind of talking about. And I think it's incredible. And it's, you know, I think sometimes, especially going through, you know, academia, you kind of feel like you're supposed to be on a certain trajectory or kind of locked into just the options that are right in front of you. And it's definitely important to remember that you don't have to go to school for this stuff. You don't have to do things, the way the courses are structured. And to go back even further to what you were saying earlier, like, I came to Davis as a transfer student, and had I not had Robin Hill, like, my very first quarter at Davis, like, she's a huge advocate for making your education like exactly the way you want it to be, and like has, you know, provides those resources. So I don't know, it's just cool to see some correlation between a lot of what you're saying and, you know, what took me so long to kind of figure out. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I think for Shepherd's face, I mean, he went to RISD. Like, you can't imagine he has as much freedom within his department as we do within ours. So that's kind of inspiring.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying. I think it's like this idea that I want to be super linear and follow this like straight path. Like, I went to school for this, so I'm going to do this and then that. And like seeing people do multiple things like artists is just really inspiring. And I hope to see it more often. And I can definitely tell that probably in the future, you're going to be definitely into a lot of different things. So it's really exciting that you find inspiration from someone who's done so many things. So it's really exciting.
What's the most exciting thing that you've seen or done?
I have to say, like, I feel like this is kind of an overarching idea, but just the 2020 election, the fact that we were a part of this whole thing and we've been fighting for so long, just doing everything we can to make people's voices heard. And I feel like I would consider that something I've seen, but I also would like to consider it something that I've done, something that we've all done because we're all here for it. Like, for example, like being able to tell our grandkids that we were a part of the protest that made history, or telling our grandkids that we were using our platforms, that maybe like if we have a platform as an artist, being able to use that to amplify other people's voices and amplify resources and things like that. I mean, I think that our generation like really pulled it together and showed the world like that we want to be heard and we're going to be.
Yeah, even like on top of a pandemic, you know, it wasn't easy. It still isn't, because it's only just started. But yeah, wow, I'm glad that you said that. It's a great answer. What would you say art is or art means to you? I know that's a loaded question, but what would you say?
I think it's, to me, it's kind of a combination between just full blatant expression combined with aesthetics within a time period. I think that like that's one of the most exciting parts for me, is being able to evolve your art to keep up with the times, to keep up with things that are trendy at a certain time, or maybe like make a statement that has to do with what's going on in the world at any given moment. Like just being able to fully express and do whatever you want. I think at a very base level, that's what art is all about. But for me personally, I really enjoy the evolution and not even knowing like what my art is going to look like next year. It's very exciting.
Yeah, because like 20 years from now, you could have completely different art, but then you'll be able to see how you've elevated or changed in a way, like whether it's your inspiration or, you know, like medium or whatever you just turn into. Yeah, that's great. What would you say is most sacred to you?
So this one I had to write down because I had to like put it into words, but to me, something that's really sacred is the balance between solitude / self-reflection and community / communication. Because initially my answer was going to be community and communication, because like I feel like that actually ties pretty closely into art as a field, because I don't know, like not one person sets the tone for a decade, right? It's the collection of the work that's produced by artists that people respond to in a certain way. But at the same time, like we can't be all about community and all about communication all the time. Like isolation, and especially 2020 has like brought this idea to me a lot more clearly, is that I appreciate time to self-reflect and time without all the extra noise that we always have to experience. So I feel like finding a good balance is like a good way not only to like create meaningful art, but also to just like live a life that isn't too much for other people or too self-indulgent.
Nice.
That was perfect. Wow, that's great. Would you say, I think you kind of touched on this a little bit, but I guess we'll kind of expand on it a little bit more. Would you say that you make art for yourself, for people to connect with, or do you make art for people directly?
I definitely don't make it for other people. Like, I don't know. It's, I don't even really consider other people so much when I'm brainstorming or even when I'm like going through a process. And I feel like that maybe comes from the fact that, like, if you're an art student, you're kind of very used to making work for your professor or for to like stand out amongst your classmates. So like any chance I get to do something that's not for anybody, I definitely want to take that.
Do you have any tips for student artists that have trouble kind of going beyond the prompts that the professors have given them for their work?
Yeah, I would say, like, basically your professor is not going to be as mad at you, like, if you take the prompt really far and it becomes something really amazing, than they would be if you just stuck to it very straightforward. I think that professors will definitely appreciate you pushing the limits. And I don't know, it's like if you're working on a project just for your professor, it is not nearly as fun as if it's something that you're excited about personally. So I try to definitely do that. Like, even if it's just like a still life, you know, like things like that that come with painting classes, like choose items that like are meaningful to you or that are visually like really stimulating, something that excites you.
Yeah, so like the practice that you're doing your professors kind of turns into like a practice of you creating things for yourself in a way.
Yeah, you have to like, you have to work hard to make certain projects interesting for yourself. That's kind of half the battle.
Yeah.
I like that idea. It's like kind of like altering your mindset to make the most out of a project. Like, I've definitely had issues in the past where I just had a really negative attitude towards some specific projects, but considering what you're saying now, yeah, it really is about like the mindset you put into like making the most out of what you are assigned to create the best work you possibly can.
Yeah, that's something that I wish somebody would have told me freshman year, because I think like I got through fall quarter and I was like, wow, I feel like I don't really have anything that I would be really like proud to put in my portfolio, or like I'm worried that this looks too academia looking and I don't want to include that in my portfolio. But then I'd start to stress because it's like, oh, like other like Renaissance artists were at their peak when they're 22 years old. So you're like, this needs to be the time when I'm making crazy progress. So that's kind of what pushed me into trying to like make the most out of my class assignments. Cause like you're spending like 8 hours a week working on it. Like, why not make it something that you're enjoying?
Right, right.
I think it's important to remember too, like those dudes were probably living, it's like 50 was like old age. So I don't know. That's a weird standard to hold yourself to, but I understand.
We have a lot of other societal pressures as well that must be taken care of, as well as being an artist. All right. I have two questions left. How do you feel about the categorization of art in relation to gender, race, and time periods?
I think that it's very like, it depends, like those three things all definitely depend on each other. So like, let's say we're talking about like the expressionist time period, like you're going to hear about 9th Street women a lot. And you're like, why weren't they just a part of the expressionists? You know, why do they have to be put into a different category? But then I think that in today's context, it allows us to learn more about them, because like, they were like, their work was suppressed just from societal standards as it started. Like, women were not gonna be praised as much as men. But then also, like, I think that it's important to today to definitely separate or categorize art based on race, because if we're living in a system that's been like corrupt from the beginning, it's not like we have to say like, oh, this type of person made this and this type of person made that. But it is important to say like, hey, if you're looking for an artist that's marginalized to support, like, here's a great list of amazing people that you probably wouldn't have been able to find before. Yeah, and then in terms of time period categorization, I think that is super important, because that's like kind of the whole way that we learn about art in terms of like art history and especially during like the time of abstract expressionism and how that was such like a transitional period. I think that it's super important to note that like there were works that looked completely opposite from each other style-wise, but they could be from the same decade. So I think that that context is really important in helping us understand art and how we're going to change the course of art history.
So you would say that categorization has more positives than it does negatives?
I think it does, yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, did you guys have any more questions for Lane?
Actually, I mean, just because the nature of this whole like podcast series has to do with like changes or transformation, you know, in the context of the last year, like if you don't mind speaking about how your practice has changed at all, what adjustments you've had to make, be it like very, you know, rudimentary stuff like studio space, if that is in fact a change you've had to make, or something that you've really learned about yourself.
Yeah, so for the rudimentary stuff like studio space, before the pandemic, I was so excited to apply for personal studio space in the art building. Like I'd been looking forward to it for so long. But I think that like, although we can't do that now and it kind of sucks, there are some pros that come with having an at-home studio or doing studio at home, because it's like, were you going to be able to buy a silk screen and build it at your own house if you didn't have to? Like, that's exciting. And right now, I mean, like, my room is very hectic right now. I have like a sewing machine in one corner and like another station in another corner, and the floor is kind of a desk. It's like very overwhelming. But having the materials at home that you normally would only have in the studio is fun because you can spend more time with them. Yeah. And then like for kind of existential questions about like how I've changed, I think I definitely appreciate isolation and like spending time with yourself in order to get a better grasp of what you think your purpose is. And all this just sounds super broad, I know, but I guess overall it's like very important to just be kind to yourself and be kind to others. And kind of like a big thing that came up for me is understanding that like this is like society and the world, like we're all kind of a collective consciousness, and it's just about like how we work together and how we work alone.
No, that's great. I mean, I totally agree. And going back to what you had said earlier, just this space for self-reflection. I mean, I think it's had a lot of people not been forced to do that. Like, had the events of the last year not really occurred, I'm not sure as many people would have been forced to do that. And I really think it's important. It's something I struggle with. Like, you know, I want to be left completely alone. And then when I'm alone, it's like, oh, I need contact. I want to reach out and connect with somebody, but that's great.
Yeah, I think it really has made me sit down and really think about like, what art do I want to be making right now? Especially with COVID and all of the other things that were going on at the same time. It's like, you know, I have a potential right now to create more artwork than I ever have. I have all the extra time and I really need to like, sit down and just do it, basically just do it. And I'm glad that it's given me the chance to do that.
Yeah, like the circumstances obviously suck, but the one benefit is that it gives us a direction to go with our art.
It does make you, going through this time, like we're all thinking, we're all self-reflecting, and especially about our own art practices. For me personally, I feel like just being in this pandemic and having all these changes and just reflecting all the time, I feel like that has changed like the mood of my art. Like I find that I'm paying attention to more negative, I would say negative tones, like in terms of like color, shadows and everything. And I feel like I wouldn't have been paying attention to things like that as much if it weren't for this pandemic and going through all these events. Yeah, it just changed the direction of my own art personally.
Well, before we let you go, I mean, is there anything you want to plug? Are there other artists you want to plug? What are you reading? What are you listening to? Just whatever you got, throw it out there.
Okay. Well, my Instagram is lane.t, L-A-Y-N-E.t. I will plug my boyfriend's art account too. He's making some very cool animations. His Instagram is at Krustye, K-R-U-S-T-Y-I-E. Reading lately, I'm kind of between two books right now. I'm trying to multi-read them, but Ninth Street Women is one that I'm reading right now, and Just Kids I'm about to finish, which is Patti Smith's book. That one is very cool, and she's also another like interdisciplinary artist that I think is really important to study.
Nice. Okay, well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This was super fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you, guys.
You can find the writings and the artwork discussed in this podcast on the UC Davis Basement Gallery Instagram at UCD_basement_gallery. You can follow Lane at LAYNE.T. Our intro and outro music is brought to you by Ariana Bustani.